you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Thinking Sideways is not brought to you by the new Justice League. Instead, it's brought to you by us, or you, or music. Because we're doing this thing, I don't know if you know this or not, but we're having a contest to create a new intro song for us because we have heard your feedback and are trying to act on it because we want you to be happy. So if you are so inclined, check out the Facebook post. There's all the information you could possibly need on there, or, you know, send us an email and ask us. Submissions are due July 31st, 2017. Don't miss it. Be there, be square. Thanks, guys.
Thinking Sideways.
Brought the aliens.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
I don't know.
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I'm Joe, your host, joined as always by
Steve
and
Devin.
And we're, of course, going to talk about another mystery this week. We're going to talk about the mysterious disappearance of a guy named Dave Box, who was last seen working the graveyard shift on June 19th, 1984 at the Fernald Feed Materials Production Center in Ohio. A lot of people have been wondering what exactly became of Dave and why.
I gotta tell you, man, I'm a little upset.
Yeah.
I've been wanting to do this one for years.
Oh, yeah?
But I never called dibs on it, so it's my own fault, because I love this story.
Also, you didn't ever do it.
That's exactly it. I never called dibs, and I never did it, so it's my own fault.
It is.
So I'm excited that we're getting to do this, because this is a fun one.
Well, obviously, you've been thinking about it, too, so you come up with some good theories,
I hope.
Oh,
I've been thinking about this for years.
Okay,
and the good news for our listeners is that I get to pretend like I've never heard of it before and ask all the questions you're asking them, so it's perfect.
There we go.
Exactly. So thank you both for your enthusiasm.
You're so welcome.
Glad you like this one. And also, I want to thank Caitlin and JW, our listeners who suggested this one, and anybody else who did and somehow got left off our list of people to thank. Sorry about that. But first of all, I want to say this story is not about Dave Box. It's about Dave Box. It's not about Dave Box, B-O-X. It's the Dave Box is spelled B-O-C-K-S.
It's a good distinction to make.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I hadn't thought. I always had it as, I put an R in it. I always had, for some reason,
Brox.
I kept saying Brox.
I did
Brox,
too. Yeah,
no, it's Box. Just Box, but not B-O-X. Because obviously, if somebody was named Dave Box, he would have changed his name to Cardboard. You know? So there cannot, probably, by definition, be a Dave Box, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so our Dave Box, was a 39-year-old who worked as a pipe fitter. He was hired at the Fresnel Feed plant in 1981, and he was considered to be a pretty solid employee and a regular fellow. Dave had been married. He had three kids. He had gotten, unfortunately, divorced several years prior to the time that he, quote-unquote, went away.
Mm.
And some people, of course, believe he died on the job. In fact, a lot of, pretty much everybody does, that he died there at the
majority of people
plant.
Think yeah. so, yeah.
But
yeah.
some very important people do not, so.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. yeah. And, of course, there's a certain conspiracy theory. Should I talk about that?
No.
No? Okay.
Why wouldn't you save that for the theories?
Okay, I'll save that then. Okay. Let's, okay.
It's like we haven't been doing this for years.
I know,
something.
Right?
All right, fine. Okay, well, hold
so,
on
but
that.
Can you talk more about the feed production?
Yeah,
place?
The Fresnel Feed Production Center, as the name implies, it produced feed for large animals like cattle and pigs. except in this case, the cattle and pigs were actually nuclear reactors. And so
yes.
the name was actually technically true, but a little bit deceptive.
Yeah, well, it's because they were feeding the materials into the reactors.
Yeah.
I believe that's why they called it the name had feed in it.
Yeah, exactly. But it was in an agricultural area. And so a lot of people kind of assumed, and it was actually built and owned by the government, the U.S. government. But they just didn't bother to tell people that actually it was shaping uranium into you know, like uranium rods for reactors and that kind of thing.
Rods,
you know, steel rods.
Billets.
Yeah.
There was three or four specific
slugs and stuff like that.
Yeah, slugs was the one I couldn't think of. Yeah, all these things that they're using to actually fuel the reactors.
Uh-huh.
Right, so it was technically feed.
It was feed for something. Yeah,
something was.
Yeah, nuclear reactors need food too, right?
Yeah.
I think the truth finally started to come out in 1983 when the locals finally found out that this innocent-looking plant was actually producing uranium, which is, of course, perfectly innocent, too.
Well,
don't get me wrong.
Well, hold on, Joe, though. So everybody knew that they were producing uranium. The idea was that they were doing it for reactors for energy. What
uh-huh.
the big secret was is that they were also making weapons grade nuclear material, which,
you know, I'm not sure that they were doing that. I think that
they took special orders. I think it's what, okay, so there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think there were technically 12 plants, so they only named 1 through 9 as plants.
Uh-huh.
But there was at least two of them that were doing custom work
uh-huh.
in terms of shaping and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm.
And the what I understood it might actually be some of those custom shops or custom buildings
mm-hmm.
that were doing some of the shaping for the weapons material.
Possible. It might be true. I had thought that they were just taking basically high-grade uranium, shaping it into rods to put into reactors so the reactors could convert it to weapons-grade fuel. But maybe they were doing all of those things. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
it sounds like there was a big complex, and they were doing all sorts of interesting
very
stuff.
Very hidden. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Clandestine stuff.
Kind of clandestine, a little bit. Yeah, obviously the employees were expected to not talk a lot about what they did.
Mm-hmm.
But the plant was there since 1951. Construction began in 51. I don't know. I think it started operating in 53.
53 sounds right, yeah.
Operated till 1989. It's gone.
That's suspiciously convenient.
I know. Yeah, it is. I know. But they have taken it away and made it a wildlife reserve or something, and there's like animals or birds or something.
Or
right
a
now.
Superfund site.
It was a Superfund site, yeah. But
it's where they raise all of our X-Men now.
Yeah, all of our three-eyed gazelles and our five-footed toes.
Blinky from The Simpsons is probably from there.
Yeah, probably. It's called, named after the tiny town of Fresnel, which I can't really seem to find on the Google aerials, but that's about 15 miles northwest of Cincinnati, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the nasty.
Mm-hmm. It was also known to the locals as NLO, which stands for National Lead of Ohio, which ran the plant for the owners, of course, as I said, the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, they sort of ran it on a day-to-day basis, but still the government made the ultimate decisions as to what happened at the plant.
There's mm-hmm. owners and then there's the contractor who runs it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's pretty standard.
Especially for the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the plant was under the control of the Atomic Energy Commission until 1979 when the Department of Energy took it over. There were some environmental and safety issues with it, and those had actually been ongoing for a long time. Since like the 50s, National Lead was reporting problems to the AEC about, you know, groundwater
leakage. The Atomic Energy Commission.
Yeah, exactly. Dust, like they had these weird bag cloth dust filters, because there was a lot of uranium dust from processing all this uranium. So that that would get filtrated and deposited into these bags, kind of like vacuum cleaner bags almost. And, well, those things had a tendency to break and spew dust everywhere and things like this. There were all kinds of issues like this that were ongoing.
You know, can I take this aside for a second? I was thinking about this today, and if you, Devin, you may not remember this, but kind of in the 70s and the 80s, there was this mode of, well, this is the way it is, and we'll just do this stuff, and it's okay, you know, technology isn't really advancing, because by and large, the general public didn't see technology making huge leaps and bounds like we do today. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine what the world would be like if we had all got stuck in, say, 1982, and for some reason our technology just didn't advance? What a frickin' mess things would be in terms of all of the stuff that was, oh, it's okay, you can pour it into the river, you can bury it into the ground.
It doesn't matter.
Well, we weren't quite there. And by 1982, we were cleaning things up, actually.
But my point is, like, what it would have been if we just stopped doing and just kept on status quo through the 90s.
Sounds like something to write to the Star Trek people about. Yeah, have them do an episode on that.
Yeah, I think they might have. Yeah. It's the Planet of the Tribbles.
Yeah, Captain's Log, Stardate, 1972.
Yeah.
But enough about those environmental issues, which they had. But we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little while. But they did have those. But we don't know whether or not they had much to do with Dave Box or not. That really wasn't his job. He was, like I said, a pipe fitter. And his job was to, like, you know, inspect and repair various
equipment.
You know, equipment, pipes, whatever. Yeah.
Like the pipes that were feeding the vacuum tubes?
Yeah, yeah.
He was part of the maintenance crew.
Yeah.
He worked the midnight shift. He was, or the is it swing?
Yeah,
the midnight shift?
He was graveyard.
Thank you.
So midnight to like 7 a.m. or 7:30
Right, so his job was
like
straight up maintenance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. The plant was shut down, and he and his crew would go out and just maintain things. Dave was last seen at the Fernald plant about 5 a.m. on the morning of June 19th, 1984. He was pronounced legally dead about 2 years later. And so let's start on the night of Dave's disappearance.
Yeah.
Yeah. He carpooled to work with a guy named Harry Easterling.
Which he usually carpooled with, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's a regular guy. And actually, Harry, if you want to see what Harry looked like, he has a beard, genial-looking fellow. He appeared on Unsolved Mysteries on an episode about this.
Yep.
Yeah. And he and Harry usually met at this restaurant parking lot, and one of them would leave their car, and they'd go in one car. On that night, Harry picked up Dave about 11 p.m. Harry reported no unusual behavior from Dave that night, except that he had bought a new lunchbox. So
very
woo-hoo.
Suspicious.
Yeah, that's suspicious.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and that's about, he said something about maybe, he was talking about maybe taking his kids on vacation the next summer or something, or later in the summer. Harry Easterling said that he and Dave always began their workday in the maintenance room, which apparently was in this thing they call the maintenance building.
Crazy.
It was a special maintenance building. He said that Dave, as usual that day, unlocked his toolbox and left the lock with the keys in it on top of the box. Dave's assignment that day was to go repair some equipment in Plant 8 in what was called the whistleblower meat hook room.
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's true.
I'm pretty sure that's not the name.
I don't think so.
No, he was assigned to Plant 8. I'm not sure exactly. I heard not specifically what he was supposed to do over there, but he was supposed to go do something. By the way, I tried to find a map of this whole complex because it's a huge place.
Yeah.
And I guess the government didn't publish maps of it, you know, surprisingly enough.
Shock.
I know. Aww. I was not able to find one on the webs anyway.
Yeah, it was a government facility.
So,
weird.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, like, you probably can't find maps of, like, Bonneville Dam, for instance, can you?
Probably not.
I mean, you wouldn't, that's not the sort of thing you would want the general public to be able to snag just in case.
Yeah. You know? I just say attention terrorist sensor pressure point right here. Yeah.
Yeah. This is where you put the bomb.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah. So no map. So where all these buildings are in relation to one another, I don't know. And of course the place is torn down. You can't even look at it on Google.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. So We're just going to have to wing it on that one. But Dave left his toolbox in the maintenance room instead of taking it with him. I'm not sure why he did that, but apparently
he did that on a regular basis.
Apparently, yeah. So he must have just decided what tools he was going to need and taken them and off he went.
Seems like, I mean, he'd worked there for a while, hadn't he?
Yeah, he'd worked there since 81, so about 3 years.
So you probably by that point know, you know, if somebody says, okay, you got to go fix this certain type of pipe, he says, all right, I need these 5 different tools and, you know.
Off I go, yeah.
Well, also probably hourly, so like, oh no, if he has to walk back for
something. If you've ever, I mean, it's a government job. So who cares if you have to walk back and forth 5 times? You're still getting paid the same rather than lugging that heavy box. But, Joe, I thought he had worked there longer than that. I thought he had started there, like, more than a decade prior to his disappearance.
I don't know. I could be wrong. I heard that he started in 1981, but, hey.
Okay,
maybe I'm wrong.
I thought that he had been working there since the early to mid-70s.
Maybe he started in his position as a pipe fitter in 81, but he was doing something else.
Maybe that's it. He started out like as a typist or something like that.
Well, you know, like a general maintenance handyman or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know. It's okay. I swore he'd been there for much longer. Like, I felt like he had had a lot of career time there.
I don't know. What does matter is that this particular night was the last night of his career there. I was talking about his toolbox. The toolbox was there a few days later after Dave disappeared. He left his toolbox, went up to Plan 8 to fix the radioactive snitch rectifier, which was reportedly making an odd sound.
Did it? And his toolbox was missing some tools, though, right? As
you would expect. Nobody has said that I can find what tools were gone, what tools were not gone.
Okay.
But the toolbox was there and with a lock on top of it. Apparently, Dave trusted his coworkers.
Yeah.
I guess they must have all had a good relationship.
Or it was company tools.
Yeah, and maybe he didn't care. Good point,
which is the weird. That is weird, though. Why would you leave your keys instead of carrying them around?
Well, that's the thing is, you know, he gets the toolbox out, and it's got a padlock on it. So, obviously, he doesn't trust people to not steal from it, and then he opens it up.
Well, he doesn't trust the day people.
Maybe that's what it is.
I just had that thought. He trusts the maintenance people, nobody else.
That must be what it is, But,
they're probably throwing his tools in the oil vats or the acid vats or something. I think it was funny.
Yeah, that could
have
been.
Look at it sizzle!
Yeah, when people are, like, planting drugs in there, planting crack. So, that night, according to Unsolved Mysteries, an unnamed coworker of Dave's. So, and we never do get a chance to find out who this person was.
Unnamed.
He was unnamed. He said that he saw Dave in a pickup truck with his supervisor having a heated discussion about something, but the windows of the truck were rolled up, so the coworker could not hear what was being discussed. By the way, this struck the coworker as odd, the windows being up, because it was a warm night.
So I have a always disturbed when we have a single source for something like that, especially when it comes from Unsolved Mysteries. But I had heard it as not a heated but a serious conversation.
That's another way. But I've heard it actually characterized as an argument.
Well, I was going to say there's a couple of different. Well, if you look at it, I was thinking about it. If it's a serious conversation, it could be a very serious, quiet tone, or it could be serious as in one person it's serious, they're not trying not to cry or something. But the whole the windows were up. What I want to know was, the vehicle turned on?
Yeah,
because it might have had the AC going.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was wondering too. So the windows being rolled up might have been totally normal.
It's a government vehicle, so it probably didn't have AC because they bought the cheapest jalopies possible.
Yeah, actually, it was 84. I bet government vehicles all have AC now.
Oh, but, standard.
Yeah.
But maybe not back in those days.
No, I remember my dad being in government vehicles, you know, regular civilian cars and trucks. And they were always the lowest model. It's kind of like you've been in a Forest Service truck before, haven't you, Joe?
Yeah, I think so.
They have nothing in them. Yeah, whatever comes bare bones standard is what they get. Mm-hmm. So but then it's a supervisor vehicle, so maybe he qualified
for AC. Stuff. Yeah, he could have. But anyway, again, this is coming to us courtesy of some unnamed anonymous person too. So who the hell knows? And apparently the same person around 5 a.m. spotted Dave again, and Dave was headed towards Plant 4, which also struck this coworker as odd since Dave's job assignment, of course, was in Plant 8.
And we don't have any records that say that he finished the job in Plant 8 and may have been sent to 4 to deal with something else.
Well, that's entirely possible. Also, in Plant 4, there was supposed to be a safety meeting around 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking maybe he was headed there early to get a good seat.
Or to take a nap.
Take a nap or screw around.
Eat his lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows? And I don't know what's in the direction of Plant 4. Maybe Plant 3, Plant 5, something else.
Maybe Plant 8.
Maybe a bathroom.
Maybe it's, parallel. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, mm-hmm. 6, 7, 8. And then mm-hmm. they're just right next to each other.
Yeah, I am not knowing.
Doesn't matter. Anyway.
But, yeah. So, this was the last person who saw Dave alive.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly at least. Well,
the last person who's come forward.
Yeah, who's admitted to seeing him alive. Dave did not make it to the safety meeting, of course. Maybe that's not why he was headed towards Plant 4. Maybe he was headed towards Plant 5.
Mm-hmm.
Plant 3.5. I don't know. Harry Easterling said that at the end of the shift, he noticed that Dave's toolbox was still sitting there with the keys on it, but no Dave. Harry looked for Dave for a little bit, eventually left a message with the security guard to give to Dave, saying that he was going home, saying that he would meet him again at the usual spot tomorrow.
Yeah, Harry thought he figured he'd pick up more work for the
maybe
night.
Maybe doing some overtime or something like that, yeah.
Although, God, it seems like, either of you remember what he said their commute time was from the restaurant to the mm-hmm. plant?
I don't know. That's a good question. I'm assuming it was somewhat substantial. I mean, otherwise, why bother carpooling?
Well, and
right?
That's exactly my thing. Like,
but it also couldn't have been more than an hour, because if they started at midnight and met at 11.
Yeah, but a 30-minute drive is a long way to have to hoof it on foot if he decides to work a couple of hours. Like, you would think that... I understand why Harry called and said, hey, tell him I left so he could, cajole somebody into giving him a ride to his vehicle.
I assume that's what happened, is somebody would have given him a ride. Somebody didn't give him a ride.
And this is in the days, of course, before we had text messaging, although intercompany phones are a thing. And so you would imagine that he would have called the switchboard and figured out where the hell he was so he could track... Dave, that is. Mm-hmm. If Dave was working overtime, could have figured out where Harry was and called Harry and told him, but
maybe.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Reportedly, Dave had a walkie-talkie on him, so I would assume they all had walkie-talkies.
That's the equivalent of inter-office phones.
Yeah, so I don't know if Harry tried to raise him on the walkie-talkie. I assume he would have, but and got no reply back because, I don't know. Something happened to Dave.
So Dave doesn't go home with... Harry?
He does not, but Harry, the next night, goes to meet Dave in the usual place in the restaurant parking lot, sees Dave's car parked there, and assumed that Dave was not in the car, assumed that he might be in the restaurant getting some food or something, but Dave...
Apparently he did that.
Yeah, occasionally, but Dave, as it turns out, was not in the restaurant either. So Harry goes to work, looks for Dave. Dave's not there, and so he reported him missing, and they began a search of the premises, which, as you can imagine, would have taken a while because it's a big, big place.
And isn't this where Harry said he got to the maintenance building and saw Dave's lock and everything sitting there? His toolbox was still wide open from the night before, or presumably from the night before.
Yeah, toolbox still sitting there with keys on it or in it. So they started a search, and sometime in the morning of the 20th, that's June 20th, somebody in Plant 6 noticed that one of the furnaces in the building, there were several different types, but one of them had suddenly dropped 28 degrees in temperature at 5:15 a.m. on June 19th.
Plant 6.
In Plant 6. Yeah, so in Plant 6, there were three types of furnaces that I've been able to find out about, and they operated at temperatures between about 1,150 degrees Fahrenheit and about 1,365 degrees Fahrenheit.
Do we know what that is?
Kind of hot.
Celsius?
Really hot.
It's hot, yeah. It's really smoking hot. It's like 99 degrees Celsius.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know, but it's super hot. It's hot enough to, I think, make you uncomfortable.
Yeah. At least.
Briefly, until you died.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The furnace in question, at least as far as I can tell, was called the automated ingot preheat furnace, which contained a bath of molten salt, which is kept at a temperature of around 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. And this was used for heating and softening uranium ingots, which were then squished into around a more rod-shaped form in something called a blooming press, like a blooming machine.
Is it actually, I saw this in your stuff before and I was confused a little bit here, Joe, because it's not actually salt. They called it green salt.
Yeah,
but it wasn't actually
like
salt.
Table salt, but it's some sort
it's,
of.
It's yeah. I mean, it's metals and there is some salts in it, but it's. I guess that's what I want to make sure people don't think that it's the white stuff that you pour on your meat and potatoes.
Not quite the same. No, and by the way, sodium is metal. Have you ever seen pure sodium?
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's just, it's metal. I mean, yeah, so that salt you're eating, that's metal, man. That's okay, though. Your body needs minerals, so it's not a problem.
Just not the heavy kind.
Yeah, no. These furnaces took days to heat up and cool down, so they were left on all the time, even, of course, overnight when the production lines were all shut down and all the maintenance workers were out there.
That's not uncommon in production facilities.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so on the morning of June 20th, one of the operators of the furnace noticed a sticky residue on it. Okay. Again, this is somewhat apocryphal. I'm not totally sure.
I was going to say, if it is a skin on the top of this liquid, hot molten liquid material, I think the term sticky is inappropriately applied because everything is gooey hot.
Yeah, are you going to be sticking your finger down there to, like, figure it out? But I think he was noticing it was on, like, the casing of it, like, kind of on the outside and on the inside. Mm. And so I'm not really sure where this one comes from. Because I read some newspaper accounts, and also there was a court case involving this and stuff. And I didn't see anything about a sticky substance or anything like that.
But again, this is again from Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, yeah.
So again, I question where if that's real or not.
Again, this is another one of those persons too who is unnamed. You know, they only have actually two people there who actually are named who testified.
Dave's
daughter and Harry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The only ones who actually go on camera and are named.
Well, Dave doesn't go on camera.
Yeah, Dave's daughter.
The actor does though.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there is a Dave in there. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's
a real
good
Dave.
Point. Yeah. Different guy. Yeah. But one thing we do know about Unsolved Mysteries or not is they did indeed shut that furnace off so they could look inside and see if there were any clues in there about the missing Dave, because they hadn't found him anywhere else. But it took 3 days, of course, for the furnace to cool down enough to where they could stick their hands in there and feel around.
Pretty sure they still didn't do that, but maybe.
Yeah. When they finally got around to poking around in the furnace, they did find stuff that shouldn't have been there. There was a set of keys, a steel toe from a work boot, part of an eyeglass frame, and Dave, of course, did wear glasses, pieces of a walkie-talkie, and a piece of stainless steel wire that had been looped together in three circles.
Do we know the size of that?
No.
Am I the only one that's amazed that they find these things in a molten furnace that was operating for at least a day?
I thought it
was suspicious that they found that ring under Clarence Roberts. And that was just a fire and some gold. This is incredible to me.
Well, actually, I checked out, because I was thinking, too, like they found the keys, for example. And the keys were not totally undamaged, but... I would have expected them to just be a little
totally
blob.
Molted.
Well, it turns out like the melting point of brass, which is what most keys are made of, is actually well above 1,200 degrees.
Oh.
Yeah, Fahrenheit. So
this is like that Breaking Bad when he's like, oh, I'm just going to stick all of this certain kind of thing in the tub because that's going to be stronger than the plastic that Mr. White told you. Did you not see?
I saw Breaking Bad. I don't remember that particular one.
When he's trying to decompose the bodies.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And he has the acid. And he's like, I'm just going to stick it in the tub. Yeah, it's like that, right?
Uh-huh.
Where you just logically in your brain, you're like, well, yeah, it's hot. So it melts metal. That's cool. But apparently not.
Oh, it does, just not, well, not yeah, it's just stuff. Not quite hot enough to do it. So
the human bone, though, that...
Well, that actually, also the human bone does not disintegrate either. It would be cooked enough to where it would be extremely brittle and where it would break up in a fragment very easily.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't actually, if you were to like heat a human skeleton at that temperature, it would stay intact.
Huh.
I mean, you could crush it very, very easily, but it would stay intact.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. That's why crematoriums pulverize bones once they come out of the fire. Never mind. Sorry.
You're welcome, everyone.
Oops. Totally, totally just forgot about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we don't know anything about the steel wire.
No, weird. Not that. And it was, in terms of size, the loops were, I think, about 3 to 4 inches across. And it was like one piece of wire, but looped in three loops.
Weird.
Mysterious.
Kind of like a clover leaf shape.
Kind of like that, kind of like a three-leaf clover.
Huh. Okay.
Did I mention there were fragments of human bone found in there, too?
Yeah,
yeah, that's why we were talking about the human bone.
Yeah.
And the cremators.
Yeah.
Pulverizing your bones.
Yeah.
There's some guy with a ball-peen hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that. If they just take it out to the parking lot and...
No. They don't do that.
No, they actually
have...
You think
it's kind of messy.
No, they have something equivalent to the ninja bullet juicer that you have in your home on a much bigger scale that they shove those big chunks into to break them up.
You would think they would just do two big plates.
That would work.
Crush.
So, okay, sorry. So we're
actually, yeah, you could take them to the
We're
dump.
A little off track here.
Oh, yeah, we are totally off the track.
Did the cops get called at this point?
Of course, yeah, the police were called.
The police weren't called before they cooled it down, though.
I think they were called actually right away. Okay. But of course, there wasn't much they could do.
When Harry got to work the next day and didn't find Sally.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they called him right away. They might have actually just had a company-only search around, and then eventually when they couldn't find him and they discovered there was a possibility that somebody had died in a mishap, then they called the police.
That's smart, I guess.
Yeah. And a local deputy sheriff, his name was Victor Corelli, said that of the keys that were found, one of them was to Dave's car. Another one they believe was to his house, but they couldn't tell for sure because it was bent and damaged, and so they couldn't really confirm that. And then apparently three other ones went to padlocks, and that's about all they know about the keys. And the keys caused a little bit of consternation for Harry Easterling because he'd seen Dave's keys. Yeah, a little odd, don't you think?
Because we just heard that he saw the padlock unlocked on top of...
Yeah, with the keys in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that he'd seen them on the morning of the 19th, 2 hours after 5:15 when the temperature dropped in the furnace, Harry had seen them... on the toolbox. And then, like,
when
the next day...
When he clocked out.
Yeah, and then the next day when he comes back to work, they're still there sitting on the toolbox. And yet,
but,
3 days later, they're found in the furnace.
Mm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a little strange.
That is a little strange.
Yeah, I think so.
I agree.
Yeah. At this point, so what the authorities knew that was that Dave Box was missing. They also knew there was evidence that somebody had wound up in a furnace in Plant 6.
Something had ended up... They didn't know at that point. Is this the initial or after they had cooled the thing off?
This is like after they had cooled it off.
Okay.
And after they had cooled it off and pulled stuff out of it.
Okay. Yeah, got it. I thought you were saying when they initially showed up.
Yeah. But there was evidence that there was somebody in that furnace. Beyond that, they really didn't know much. So the local coroner's office wouldn't sign a death certificate because there was a lack of evidence that David died. The sheriff's department was treating it essentially as a missing person case, and they kept the file open. But everybody kind of believed that Dave had died in the furnace in Plant 6. Question was, well, how and why? Was it an accident? Did Dave commit suicide? Or was he perhaps murdered?
Mm.
Yeah. Members of Dave's family have said they're sure it was not suicide. Of course, they often do. But his daughter said that Dave had bought groceries for the week. He'd paid all of his bills. He was planning a vacation with his kids.
Casey, that's her name, right?
Yeah, Casey, on the other hand, Dave apparently did have some issues. Apparently, around the time of his divorce, he did attempt suicide, and I'm not sure how serious an attempt we're talking about here. But apparently,
I was going to ask that.
Well,
if there's any record of, you know, did he shoot a gun and barely miss himself, or did he do the cry for attention?
Yeah,
take
some pills and call
911. Or badly scratch himself with a safety razor on the wrist, kind of. You know, there's a full spectrum. Not that I'm belittling the act of trying to take your life, but there is a spectrum, and we don't know where he falls in that.
Yeah, some people are a little more hardcore about it, a little more determined to get the job done. But I don't know. But as for the murder theory, and the family does think that it was probably murder. There's no one really with any motive. Dave was a nice guy, apparently, had no enemies. Except, of course, as I mentioned previously, the Fernald plant did have some issues with environmental quality. And so Dave's family has suggested that perhaps he was going to talk to somebody, perhaps the press, about the situation and maybe be a whistleblower. And so... they're thinking Dave was murdered to shut him up.
Interesting.
And so we have essentially three theories. I'm going to throw a fourth one in there, too, later on, but some fun ones. Well, not really fun, but, you know.
That's a weird application of the word, but
yeah,
I'll accept it because we do it all the time.
All right. It's morbid, but, yeah.
Morbidly fun.
Yeah. Okay. Well, our first theory is it was an accident. They fell into that furnace. I think personally this is kind of unlikely, but you know, it is considered to be a possibility.
Can I ask a question before we get too far into the theories?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll pull my hand down. All of our theories are saying that it's Dave's remains or whatever was pulled out of that furnace was Dave.
Most of our theories are saying that. Yeah.
Most.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay, so what we're talking about until you say otherwise is the remains or the things that were pulled out of the furnace were Dave.
Yeah, it was okay. Dave.
I just want to clarify
Dave was in the furnace.
That.
Yeah, so, yeah.
His keys were there.
His keys were there. And parts, the remains of his work boots were apparently there. And his
Maybe.
Glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or somebody's. All right, so as far as the accident one goes, nobody, as far as I know, had actually fallen into one of these furnaces before. And I tried to find on the web exactly what the make and model of the furnace was, and so I could see a picture of it, or at least a drawing, diagram, something.
Mm-hmm.
Had no luck. The most specific information I could find was in a court document that referred to it as a, quote, Nusal vat, that's N-U-S-A-L, vat, unquote. And I searched on the web for that and couldn't, got zip. That's about it.
Have you ever looked at the imagery from steel refineries?
Yeah.
So they tend to either be a long, hot trough.
Uh-huh.
Or they're more of, drum is not the word, but it's a giant bucket of hot liquid so that it can then be moved and poured into a form.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only two shapes that I've ever seen. I mean, I'm ignoring whatever was on Unsolved Mysteries because it really looked like what they had was made out of storage containers.
Whatever they had in that video sure looked nothing like our furnace.
I did find
a picture of a top-loading similar kind of furnace on the web, an old picture and an old manual.
Okay.
And it looked nothing like what they had on there.
Right, but was it like a big square hot pit of turn of some
kind
sort?
Kind of, but it had like a bunch of apparatus around the top because a lot of these were top loading furnaces, and
the unheated material into the opening at the top.
Yeah, but in this case, they would put ingots in there, and they would pull ingots out. Nothing got poured really because they would pull them out and they hadn't melted. They could just shape them. I think they softened them enough that they were easier to shape.
So it'd be more like the kind of ovens they use for like glass blowing or stuff, something like that maybe.
Yeah, and so as far as I know, they were top loading, but I don't know 100% for sure. They could have been. Yeah. They could have been front loading.
But one would presume that there was some sort of guardrail or
railing
to keep at least the people who are putting those things in.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe a velvet rope.
I love it.
I think so.
I think a velvet rope. Yeah, yeah, they had a velvet rope around it with a little sign.
Because that's safe.
Yeah.
It keeps me safe at the movie theater. It
keeps the tourists out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or wait, what are the little zippy ones they use at the airport?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For the TSA lines? Because nobody gets through those.
We call those stanchions,
that works. Yeah. Dave, I think, was a pretty safety-oriented guy, though, and I'm sure they had something more serious than that to keep people from wandering
Surely.
Over and just stumbling in.
Yeah.
And let's face it, you know, you don't need to have a lot of brains to not be falling into a 1,200-degree molten salt furnace. Yeah.
There's
right?
no horseplay on the edge of the pool.
No.
And you can tell. You can,
no running.
It's not like you could sort of accidentally back up and fall in either. You're going to feel that heat, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to be feeling it. And so I think even an amoeba would have been smart enough to not fall
I
into
agree.
The furnace.
Yeah.
So I grew up in an area in Southern Oregon, and there was, I think it was, I can't remember the name of the place, but they dealt with nickel. And so they were heating nickel and doing all of these things. And unless you were just in the general vicinity, you were okay. But when you had to be around any of the burners or the super hot, like these kind of 1,000-plus degree areas, you were required to put on one of those nice, fancy, shiny metal reflective heat suits.
I would think so, yeah.
So I can't imagine that they would just let the maintenance guy just walk up and, you know, start messing around with something.
Well, but
he would have to be appropriately attired.
But he also wasn't even supposed to be in plant six.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he was supposed to be in plant 8 and then later on in plant 4. But yeah, so what was he doing? Maybe he was just wandering by, saw a door ajar, thought, huh, I'll go check and see what's going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then he went in.
That seems wrong. Yeah. I don't like this theory.
I find it kind of hard to believe that this was an accident. I really do. So I got to give this one a fail.
Agreed.
Are you like that, Steve?
Well, I don't know. You know, people take Epsom salt baths and they say it makes them feel better. So he was like, it was a salt bath. So yeah. No, I really think this is a terrible theory.
Yeah, my feet feel crappy. I'm going to go stick my feet in there. Whoops. Ah!
Whoops. Yeah.
Okay, our next theory.
Now they call me Stumpy.
Yeah. So our next theory is suicide. I almost said suicide, but no, suicide. Apparently, as I mentioned before, Dave had had some issues with depression. And, of course, as we said, he attempted suicide not just a few years previously during his divorce. And so throwing yourself into a molten salt vat would definitely solve your problem if you wanted to kill yourself.
It would be a pretty horrible way to go, though.
It would be pretty awful.
I mean, we all saw Terminator. We saw how long it took Arnold.
Yeah, but he was a Terminator. I think a human being, it would be, like, a little quicker.
Hopefully.
I would think so as well, but yeah, it would still be. Little bit of time that it
didn't. Oh, good Lord, I couldn't imagine that.
Not that there's a good way to kill yourself, but that is not the good way to kill yourself.
Yeah, no. You never know. It might be super quick. It might be that your nerve endings are shocked and they just stop working and that you go into shock right away.
I hope.
If it were not 1984, we could look at Dave's computer and see if he did web searches on topics like, quote, how long does it take to die if you throw yourself in the molten salt?
That would definitely settle the question.
Yeah, that would help a lot, but we can't do that. No web searches available. And I don't know, there's no record that he asked anybody. So you say, if you fell into that, how long do you think it would take you to die? But I would think it would be over really quickly, but I still would rather just shoot myself personally.
I think I would. A whole bunch of other ways.
But on the other hand, I've seen cases where people have picked even more hideous ways to kill themselves than this. I mean, people like soak themselves in gasoline and light themselves on fire.
And who's that guy who, you know, has tied the rope around his neck and then accelerated the car? That was
The Corvette.
Definitely killed himself that way.
So that'll do it. But
that was Britain.
Yeah.
It was in Britain, yes.
Yeah, so there's worse ways, I guess, but it doesn't sound quite right to me. And on the other side of things, people have noticed that Dave had just bought a new lunchbox. So, I mean, you know, if you're going to kill yourself...
Sign of stability, what isn't?
I know, exactly. Really? Obviously, you know, he was planning for the future if he'd bought a new lunchbox, right?
We did actually get this feedback a little bit when we did the Moorgate tube crash, though. Because we talked about evidence of him having, you know, cash for a new car in his pocket.
Yeah, he was going to go get something for his daughter.
And there were a lot of people who kind of came out and said... In their understanding of people who commit suicide, oftentimes it's not like you wake up and say, yep, today's the day I'm going to kill myself.
Uh-huh.
It just, I mean...
Spur of the moment.
You just are like, oh, yeah, that, here we go.
Uh-huh. Yeah, maybe you've sort of been toying with the idea for a while, and it's one day for one reason or another. Everything just kind of gels. You say, okay, now's the time.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe something bad had happened with his supervisor, and he thought he was going to lose his job, and thought, well, I'll just... jump into that pool instead of
it could be there were
this. You know, just by providence of planning for the future doesn't necessarily mean that he wasn't planning on committing suicide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
But
point.
I also agree. I don't think that he did. But hey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, who knows? There was some other stuff. His daughter, of course, said they were planning a vacation at some point. He'd paid all his bills and bought all the groceries and stuff. And again, as we said, it doesn't really mean much. I mean, if you could look at somebody as his buying groceries for the family and paying all the bills is sort of cleaning up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
You know, before he kills himself.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah. Planning a vacation doesn't really mean much. I mean, I don't know if that means serious planning or if you're just sort of vaguely talking about going to Disneyland or something, you know. Yeah. It's just, we all talk about stuff like that. I mean,
In the future conversations.
Hell, we've been planning on a European trip to solve mysteries in Europe for how long now?
4 years.
Exactly.
Still not happening.
No closer to actually.
I mean, still hasn't happened.
No, not likely. It might happen. Who knows?
No, because you're going to try and kill me.
As soon as somebody steps up and pays it. Okay, pays for it. Yeah. There would be one reason to do it I can think of. You know, I would rather, again, go out in the woods with a shotgun and take care of business. But on the other hand, there would be opportunities at the plant at Fernald. Lots of opportunities. And plus, if Dave had made it look like an accident, then he would leave his family a really nice opening for a lawsuit.
True.
So, and workers' comp and all kinds of stuff. But at the same time, Dave doesn't seem to have gone out of his way to make it look like an accident.
You know, why, I know we've said this before, why go into that furnace? That place was known to be full of very corrosive acids to the point that they had a, I suddenly cannot think of the name of the guy who replaces soles on shoes.
Cobbler.
Thank you. They had somebody on site who fixed shoes for the employees because there was so much acid on the ground, it ate through their work boots at an obscene rate.
Uh-huh.
So they did this for people. Like, okay, why did he do that versus going and finding one of the giant vats of acid and jumping into that thing?
In fairness, though, if you jumped into a vat of corrosive acid, it's unlikely that any part of you will be found, right?
That's true.
Versus if he knew the science of this thing, although more of his bones should have been found if it was his entire skeleton.
Well, here's the deal, though, is that I'm assuming, I'm going on a limb here, I don't know the exact compound that they use of salt, but as we all know, salt at room temperature is solid, and it might well be by the time they cooled it down enough to where they could actually get into it and search it, it might have solidified.
Yeah, that's true.
And so maybe they had to sort of chip through everything. And,
yeah, that's fair.
And they didn't break things up enough to find the smaller fragments, maybe.
Yeah, they might not have considered it worthwhile. Once they had some bones, that might have been enough. They didn't feel like they needed to, like, chip through the entire thing and try to extract every single bone, which, by the way, they weren't going to do without breaking them all up anyway, because by the time they've been heated that much, they're going to be pretty fragile.
But I guess to your point of, you know, finding the super corrosive acid, like, if you want it to look like an accident, you still have to leave some evidence of the accident.
Yeah, right? But you still think he would have, like, you know, put, like, a banana peel on the top of the thing.
Or something.
Yeah,
right?
Something to make it look like it was an accident.
But in looking forward at the next theory, if what we're going to talk about after we finish this up was what happened, then why did they throw him in something that would leave materials rather than throwing him in something that would completely destroy it?
No,
we'll talk about it when we get to that theory,
there, though,
but I just want to bring that up now so that we don't forget to talk about it.
I don't know, but back to the suicide thing, if it was going to make it look like suicide versus an accident, well, you'd think he would have taken off his hard hat and his glasses at least.
What?
Yeah, or maybe not, but, you know, not a requirement.
If you're going to commit suicide, you don't give a rip.
Yeah.
I don't care that I'm wearing all my work gear. I'm just going to take the plunge.
Just go plunge. Yeah, maybe.
And if it's going to be an accident, if you're going to stage an accident, no investigator says, oh, weird, he took off his gloves and his hat and his glasses and then stumbled in. Like, that. That series of events wouldn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
I would agree with
it. It would make more sense that he had an accident and fell in with all of his gear.
But he should have done something. He should have left a rope or a piece of cable right there for him to trip over or something.
Or that this cardboard, the sign you see swinging on the end of the rope in the Looney Tunes cartoons.
He should have just unhitched the velvet rope a little bit so it looked like, you know,
it looked like it had been
Elvis was here
for a little bit, so it looked like somebody had stumbled over it.
So
I don't know about this one.
About suicide, you mean?
Yeah. No, this whole suicide theory.
It's more plausible than an accident, but less plausible than some others to me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it just seems like it's entirely plausible to me. But again, there's not really any evidence for it. But then again, okay, let's give that one a maybe and move on to our next theory, which of course is murder.
Da da da.
Murder, everybody's favorite. So again, assuming that was Dave's, you know, remains that were found in there, not that much was found, the prevalent theory out there, of course, is that Dave was murdered by his coworkers or somebody at the company because he was a whistleblower.
What was he blowing whistles on?
Either National Lead or the plant itself. I mean, because again, National Lead was running it, but they didn't actually own it, so maybe he was ratting out National Lead to the government or ratting out...
Joe, can you, for people who aren't familiar with the term whistleblower, can you explain that for folks? Because not everybody knows that.
Somebody who sees wrongdoing at your company or within the government or whatever and reports it to the authorities or maybe reports it to the press, that kind of thing, they're called whistleblowers. Also, you know, one man's whistleblower, of course, is one man, and another man's just plain leaker.
Right.
It just all depends. A lot of people leak constantly.
Julian Assange.
Yeah, that kind of thing. When you leak, you know, a lot of people leak for their own personal reasons. And then sometimes people will leak, and then when they get busted, they'll try to call themselves a whistleblower. Like mm-hmm. that chick at the NSA who recently gave some documents to the press and then she got busted for it. And then she tried to claim, oh, no, I was a whistleblower. No, really not.
Is it Karen Silkwood? Isn't she considered, I mean, her death is mysterious and that's mm-hmm. a whole other thing. And yeah. that's why the murder thing made me think of it. But isn't she considered a bit of a whistleblower?
Yeah, I don't, you know.
Because she was in a nuclear reactor facility.
She was in a nuclear facility. I don't remember. It's been so long since I read anything about that or saw the movie or anything. I can't remember if she actually did any actual whistleblowing or if she just died.
She was supposed to give statements. I remember that, but I can't remember if she would be considered a whistleblower.
We know what a whistleblower is. Yeah, we've probably beaten that one to death. Yeah, let's go back to the. But
we're in the right theory for that.
But anyway, that is one of the reigning theories out there. But the only problem I have with the whistleblower theory is that the cat was really out of the bag by 1984 when Dave died. National Lead had actually been telling the Atomic Energy Commission and then after that the Energy Department since at least 1958 about miscellaneous contamination problems that they were having. In fact, they kept going to the government and saying, hey, guys, this is not a good situation. Like, for example, there were some massive concrete tanks for radioactive waste. One of them they discovered had some big cracks in it, and it was leaking radioactive waste into the ground and contaminating groundwater, and National Lead goes to, and again, the government says, hey, we've got a problem here. Your tanks are leaking. And the government says, okay, well, the cracks only go down so far, not all the way to the bottom, so don't fill the tank up any further than the height of the cracks. And that takes care of the problem. And then so that was an example of this.
Good science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just one example of that. And so National... Yeah, essentially National Lead, they did their job. They did.
They did their due diligence.
Yeah, and so as far as somebody from National Lead murdering Dave, there's no excuse there. That National Lead, it was well documented that they had done everything they could to keep the government abreast and everything. The government just said, hey, we don't care. And so there was really no liability on their part.
I question that. I do question that isn't blaming the boss on mm-hmm. National Lead. Is that uh-huh. who it was?
Yeah.
National Lead of Ohio. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like maybe they could have taken steps to fix things, but not wanting to foot the bill, just kept turning to the USG and saying, hey, guys.
That was the thing, though. Essentially, the government paid them a certain amount of money to do this, and this was above and beyond, really, probably what they felt that was in their job description. They just said, dudes, this needs to be fixed. Either come in and fix it or give us money.
Would they have even had the authority to fix it?
I'm sure if they had actually said, hey, government, we're going to fix those cracks in that tank and on our own dime, the government would have said, okay.
Or
the government would have formed a Blue Ribbon Commission and studied it for 10 years. And then,
the environmental impact of fixing the whole
thing about the fact that they were leaking uranium dust into the atmosphere of the area. So you were talking about this before, is they had big bags in their ventilation system to capture all of that material. It's kind of like in your home ventilation system. You have those funny paper cardboardy things that stop the crud from going in. Yeah. It's a massive version of that.
Yeah.
Those things failed once a month. Like they were supposed to last months and months and months, and they always failed every month. Now, if you're doing this for 10, 20 years, don't you think that at some point somebody would say, we should find a new bag?
Yeah, well,
this vacuum cleaner bag sucks. We should find a new bag.
The whole system sucked. But then, I don't know. Again, that was reported, by the way, to the government. The government just said, hey,
But I think the whistleblower allegation, just to get back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, they were reporting that to the government and the Department of Energy. It didn't really come out to the public mm-hmm. until 84, and that's when, as you put it, the cat really came out of the bag.
Well, the thing about it is that's when the public first became aware of it, but there were things that happened before that. As early as, like, 1961, there was a University of Cincinnati study that found groundwater contamination around the plant. Mm-hmm. And then later on, a year later, the United States Geologic Survey confirmed this. And so it's not like it was carefully hidden within the bounds of just National Lead and the Department of Energy.
It's also the 60s and the 70s information transfer. It's a very slow process.
Yeah.
Unlike today. I mean, remember, we're spoiled. Something happens and we could technically all know about it the very same, if not next day.
Well, yeah. And of course, this was early 60s. The environment was not as hot button an issue then. Mm-hmm. But then 20 years later, 1981, the Ohio EPA, that's Environmental Protection Agency, they found radioactive contamination in the wells around Fernald. That was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And they also inspected Fernald and the plant itself in March 84, found lots of violations of hazardous waste laws. Again, that was March 84. That was months before Dave disappeared.
Mm-hmm. So what we're saying is that there was no need for a whistleblower.
No, the whistle was blown. Yeah.
It was blown.
Yeah, so
it was blown up.
Yeah.
It didn't exist anymore. There was no whistle to blow.
Not really. Yeah, and so that's why the whistleblower theory for me kind of falls flat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, who would he have been talking to? Obviously, the whistle was blown as far as the government knowing about it, so he would have been talking to somebody with the press, right, to out the government, which was not...
Which was obviously not making it really well known what they already knew.
Yeah, so if he was talking to a reporter, well, you'd think the reporter would have come, whoever it was, would have come forward and confirmed this, and nobody has, of course. Or maybe, on the other hand, maybe he went to the feds and just said, hey, there's all this stuff going on. He's not realizing National Lead had already been keeping them all apprised of all these issues anyway. So he contacts the Department of Energy and says, hey, you guys ought to know about what National Lead is doing at that plant, man. It's just crazy irresponsible. And the guy at the government says, yeah, let me get your name and address and everything. And then he calls the hit squad, the federal hit squad, and knocks him off.
Well, I guess
But again, why would you do that when it's already the case that, you know, it's come out in public anyway?
I mean, I don't know. I don't really have a good sense of Dave's personality. I don't have the sense that he's this type of guy. But what if Dave was talking with other people about wanting to either, like, unionize or bring a class action lawsuit against? I mean, who knows what kind of sickness and contamination the workers were suffering from.
Well, yeah.
So
there
had
was
he
some
been
of
kind of talking about, hey, you know, my doctor says I'm inhaling a lot of uranium and that's super unhealthy for me and I'm at high risk and we should probably try to get a settlement from the government and talk to the wrong person. I mean, that, you know, if he was the kind of main person championing
I
don't, he doesn't seem like the
He didn't seem like a troublemaker, but I don't think he did that because, again, Harry Easterling, his carpool buddy, didn't say Dave ever said anything about that to him.
But well, Harry.
I would stay quiet, too.
Harry also.
Yeah.
Harry
like, no,
also.
I didn't know anything about that.
Also made a point of saying that Dave seemed to know his stuff about what was going on in the plants.
Yeah, he kept an eye on that stuff.
Yeah, and it was funny is that when you read it, you'll say, well, Dave knew, he would say, oh, if you're working around this thing, stay away from its high radiation. If you're this, that. Well, but he maintained the stuff. So he, like, if it was something to say was one of those uranium dust bags, yeah, he totally knew it was because those things were always full because they were always breaking. Like, he would have had just general observational knowledge.
Well, and he could have been someone like me who is a little bit of a worrier and likes to...
You don't worry about anything.
I don't, you're right. But, I mean, you know, somebody who likes to be a little more safety conscious and aware of their surroundings, whereas other people, you know, you guys are good examples of this, are a little more prone to be like, let's just go do this thing and see how it works out. And I'm like, no, there's uranium in those pipes. And you guys are like, oh, okay,
we'll put the black cat that's fireworks in there.
You know,
I can't smell no radiation. It's fine. Yeah.
I mean, I think there are just people like that in the world who are a little more aware and we said he was safety minded, so he might have been a little
he
more.
He was, you know, he probably went out
trying to look out for his fellow worker. But again,
probably,
I don't think that necessarily he was actually championing some sort of.
Nah, nobody's reported that.
I don't think there was a good reason for him to have been murdered.
Well, somebody, no, not really. And also, if they had murdered him, it seems kind of self-defeating to push him into a furnace at the plant.
Yeah.
Well, and there's,
that invites scrutiny.
Well, the problem, of course, I mean, this story is a bit sensationalized because we've got Unsolved Mysteries in the mix, which seems to have inserted some details.
Some stuff,
but you've been looking at the court documents, and not all of that stuff is there.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, if you look at the Unsolved Mysteries, they note that piece of stainless steel wire that was looped in three circles.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In their video, they imply that the wire had been looped around his ankles.
And used to lower him in?
Yeah, the third loop was used for a hook on a heist, and so they could raise his body up and then drop it into the furnace. But the problem is no press accounts or court documents mention the stainless steel wire. It's only in the Unsolved Mysteries.
Suspicious.
Yeah. So from the Cincinnati Inquirer, I was able to find out the following things were found in the furnace. The keys to box, toolbox, metal eyelets and toe plates from a pair of boots, other metal bits,
and
a few toe fragments. They weren't melted, but they found them. The boots were gone. The metal was still there.
Right, so melted eyelets from boots, right?
Yeah, metal bits and bone fragments. There's nothing in there about loops of steel wire. And then there's the keys. If the keys were found in Dave's toolbox, but also in the furnace, this could mean somebody took the keys and planted them in the furnace. But on the other hand, it could also mean that Dave just had more than one set of keys.
He could have had work keys and home keys.
He could, yeah.
Which would give more credence to the fact that he was totally comfortable just leaving his, you know, three work keys around instead of saying, yeah, he left his house key and his, you know, storage unit key and his car key. He just, like, left sitting in that room. He had his personal keys with him, so it didn't really matter as much if they got stolen.
Yeah, he would not be the first person that had more than one set of keys.
No, sure.
Yeah. But I have a hard time understanding why anybody would drop the keys if they murdered him, whether they would go back and drop the keys in the furnace after, because...
It's like a ham-fisted attempt to prove that he was in there.
To prove that Dave was in there, yeah.
Yeah.
Or it's a ham-fisted attempt at destroying the evidence.
But again, I say, okay, if you're going to destroy evidence, you've got a whole... Why would you dump the evidence into the same vat as the body instead of the vat of acids that are available?
I mean that, like, he got murdered somewhere else and someone was trying to dump evidence in there.
Oh.
For whatever reason.
And they happened to find one of the other bodies that they put into that thing?
I don't know. Maybe... I don't know why they would find bone fragments necessarily. But, I guess you could get to the point where you would be kind of a dummy... And be like us and be like, yeah, that's really, really hot and molten. So it's obviously going to melt everything versus the acid. Like, I don't know what it's going to do. So I'll just throw it in that molten stuff and it'll melt everything.
Yeah, maybe they didn't realize.
There's no way this plant will ever shut this thing down for long enough for anybody to pull anything out of it. So it's just going to be lost in there forever.
Yeah, it might have been that whoever it was, if somebody did that, didn't realize that they were actually keeping records of the temperature in the furnace, which kind of makes sense that they would. But
it does.
Didn't realize. That it would sort of be this giveaway that they pushed his body in there.
Yeah.
But again, at the same time, if you're disposing of him and you totally want to get rid of the body, then it makes no sense to go back later and throw the keys in there.
No.
No sense at all.
At all, no.
And if you don't really care if the body is found, and the main reason to push it in there was just to eradicate the indications that you had, say, axe murdered him or bludgeoned him to death or strangled him, just whatever evidence.
No
you want to
fingerprints
get rid of that.
Or DNA are going to survive, right?
Absolutely. So if that was your motive, then again, what purpose does it serve to drop the keys in there?
Why wouldn't you just leave them where they are?
Or why wouldn't you throw them in the garbage? Maybe it was down a sewer drain on your way home.
Maybe
exactly.
It was a ham-fisted attempt by the management to cover up what, you know, they thought was...
Or a ham-fisted attempt to prove that he did it willingly. And so, I'll just toss the keys in where they found him, or they think he's at, because that idiot obviously got himself killed, and I don't know.
Lots of ham-fisting in this.
Yeah, I know. It makes no sense to me. But I can only conclude
like rock'em, sock'em robots.
Oh, God, those things.
With the ham.
But yeah, I can only conclude.
Rock'em, suck'em, ham robots.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. We keep interrupting you. I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah. anyway, I think he had two sets of keys. So
I think he probably did.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So murder, maybe not.
Yeah. Probably. It doesn't mean he wasn't murdered. I'm just not seeing it. There's no physical evidence, but of course there isn't because, they shoved his body into the furnace. So yeah.
Actually, we keep calling it a ham-fisted cover-up, but actually it was a pretty dang good cover-up.
They did pretty well.
Whatever happened to him...
Whatever evidence might have been there is not there.
It's totally gone.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as motive, well, again, leaving aside the whistleblower thing, well, I can't see a motive there either, and there's no evidence of whistleblowing, so I don't know.
So who knows?
I mean,
unless he's got dirt on somebody for something else.
Well, yeah, there could have been something else, or it could have been just one of the security guards was just a serial killer.
Or the mob was involved somehow, and he was going to spill the beans on the mob.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, seriously, I mean, if you want to think about murder, it could have been just a random serial killer kind of thing. You know,
it could have been.
It could have been just a general heat of the moment fight, killing kind of thing. I didn't mean the heat of the moment. Nice pun, I know. But, you know, somebody just losing their gourd and beating the holy hell out of him, going, oops, he's not breathing. Well, I got to get rid of
better
this.
Better shove him in here. Better shove him into the furnace.
It's the closest place. I don't want to be seen carrying him.
Right.
Yeah.
He's heavy.
Yeah.
I'm lazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to get rid of him.
Well, also, I don't want to be seen carrying him.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any more theories?
Yeah, one more, which is that Dave was not in the furnace at all. Maybe Dave ran off to join the circus. But there were some parties that said that maybe he didn't die in that furnace. Among them, Allstate Life Insurance Company, Credit Life Insurance Company, National Lead of Ohio, Inc., Workman's Compensation Bureau of Ohio. So they were all defendants in a suit that was brought by Dave Bach's family. They wanted him declared legally dead so they could collect benefits like Social Security, Workman's Comp,
that
life
makes
insurance.
Sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, of course, as I said earlier, the coroner's office wasn't issuing a signed death certificate or anything.
There's no body.
Yeah, no body, no evidence,
no
really.
No provable body.
Yeah, and I don't even know bones like that have been... subjected to that amount of
there's
heat.
No DNA left.
You're not even
going
to get DNA. I mean,
even if DNA was available at that time, there's no usable DNA. It is so cooked.
Yeah, I can't imagine it. So how the hell do you tell for sure?
You don't.
I mean, most people kind of believed it was Dave, but as far as proving it, well,
you can't.
Yeah,
I mean, he literally could have gone to a graveyard and dug up a set of bones and thrown them in with his glasses and a pair of his boots.
Yeah. He could have thrown in his lucky rabbit foot for all we know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure the bones were somewhat identifiable as human.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
for
rabbit
all
bones
we really,
are pretty
really
small.
Know.
I mean, have you ever seen a rabbit? They're small.
I'm just saying.
They have little bones.
Okay, so
I mean, you're
hyperbole,
small, but your bones are not that small.
A little bit of hyperbole. Okay, fine.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, like, we don't know. We have no way of even probably realistically identifying if they were human or not because we don't have no DNA markers or anything like that.
They call them bone fragments, too. Yeah. I don't know how big the pieces were.
Yeah, so
I assume that human bones, if you look at them under a microscope, you know, I assume...
I don't know once they're
waste.
That cooked, though.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I
yeah, maybe
assume.
Threw in a ham hock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ham-fisted ham hock.
Yeah. But apparently, according to the courts and everything, they seem to be satisfied that they were indeed human bones. But I don't know how they went about confirming that. So, did Dave leave town and start a new life somewhere? I kind of doubt it. This
I
is
doubt
possible.
It as well. It's possible, but
it's possible.
I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I really, as much as I would like to call this a cover-up or a conspiracy, I hate to say it, but if that's truly his remains in that smelting pot or whatever that thing was, I think it was an accident.
Well,
industrial accidents happen a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to rank it.
And if the velvet rope wasn't in place, he may have walked in.
Well, I'm going to rank them in order by likelihood, in my opinion at least. My opinion is that the theories are, number one, suicide. Number two, murder. Number three, accidents. And accident for me is number three on the list. And last of all, faked his own death is number four.
Okay.
So that's where I'm at. And the reason I'm saying, again, accident is he had no business in Plant 6. There was no reason for him to be
there.
That
we know of.
Right.
He had no business there. And frankly, accidentally falling into one of these furnaces strikes me as ludicrous. And really, I mean, really kind of absurd. I just find suicide a lot easier to believe than accident myself. Devin, what do you think?
I guess I don't like any of the theories.
Yeah.
I most believe, I think, accident. I don't believe suicide. I don't want to believe murder.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause just like of the horrors in this world, going into a furnace alive.
Well, we don't
high up there,
especially unintentionally.
Actually, yeah. If he was murdered, I don't think they actually shoved him in alive because, or at least not conscious.
Yeah,
because all right, so, I mean, I'm not. Are you going to wrestle somebody into a furnace?
No.
I sure as hell wouldn't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, all right. So then I guess I like murder the most because it's probably the least painful for him.
I suppose. Yeah, that's true. He was like bludgeoned, and then you know, the furnace he went.
Yeah,
that's a good reason to like murder. And I got to admit, murder is number two on my list.
Yeah.
And murder is entirely possible. It's just that we have no evidence, and that's why
we
I'm
have
going
no
with,
evidence
I'm
gonna,
that's why I'm
yeah.
going with suicide.
Steve,
rather than murder.
I already said mine. I'm behind accident.
All right. Okay. Well. All right. So you guys out there probably have your favorite theories. So you're going to want to contact us and let us know what they are. Hint: I'm right. So you can send us.
Right.
An email. We actually have email, believe it or not. It's thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com. So, yeah, weigh in today.
What?
Yeah, and we also have a website, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com, where you can find our episodes, which you can download and listen to. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can subscribe. You can rate us, review us. Rate us high, review us well. If you don't mind. And you can stream us all over the place, including Google Play, Stitcher, and God knows where else. And, of course, we have social media. Facebook. You've heard of that, right? So we have a group. Join the group. Like the page. So don't join the page and like the group. No. No.
Yeah.
Join the group. Like the page.
Yep.
Twitter. Thinking Sideways. Drop the G, and we are on the Twitter. And we have a subreddit, Thinking Sideways. Any action on that lately, Devin?
Some?
Okay. There you go. And of course, you can also support us by buying merchandise. So, on our website, you'll find a link to Zazzle and Redbubble, where you can get shirts, mugs, stickers, and God knows what else.
All kinds of stuff.
All kinds of good stuff.
All of the things.
Yeah, murder weapons.
No.
Well, I mean, a mug can be a murder weapon.
It's not marketed as a murder weapon.
No, it's not. It's a paperweight.
We don't make murder weapons.
Yeah. And so that's about it. So anyway, until next week, folks, this is Thinking Sideways HQ signing off. And like I said, send us an email. Tell us what you think. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Talk to you guys next week.